This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
What's up, NBA fans? It's Danny Green here. For those who want an inside look at the league through the eyes of a three-time champion, check out my podcast, Inside the Green Room. New episodes drop every week. Be sure to subscribe to Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
6:13 on this Thursday morning. They said it was going to get cold, and they didn't lie. 31 degrees right now on the South Shore, a little bit cooler than that, colder than that on the North Shore. It's going to be chilly today. Highs of only 45 and then 48 tomorrow. So that means for the first night of parades, it's going to be chilly. You have to bundle everybody up. Saturday, is going to be nice. Plenty of sunshine, highs of 55, but still cold if you're not in the sunshine, and 54 on Sunday. They do have a chance for showers, but I think that's primarily going to be Saturday night into Sunday morning, so hopefully it won't affect the parades. We're going to talk about what's going on with Russia and the United States and Ukraine and peace talks, and President Trump saying that Ukraine started the war. And I've been critical of Senator John Kennedy and some of the and the way he carries himself, because he's a brilliant man that carries himself like, I'm just being honest here, like Foghorn Leghorn, and makes himself a cartoon character. But at least to his credit, he did stand up yesterday and say, no, Ukraine did not start the war. And he also said that he thought Vladimir Putin was a gangster. And I'm just trying to give John Kennedy credit where credit's due. With that said, we go to Keith Darden, professor in the Department of Politics, Governance, and Economics at the School of International Service at American University to get the latest. Good morning, sir. How are you?
Good morning. I'm doing well. Thanks for having me on.
I'm no John Kennedy fan, and I don't mean to draw you into Louisiana politics here, but it is interesting to hear President Trump say, and some people look, think that he's infallible, others don't. He does some good things, he does some bad things, as does any other human being. But to say that Ukraine started the war and then have others repeat it, that's just like a game of telephone. That's just crazy where the truth gets perverted, is it not?
You know, I don't know how much the truth is going to get converted or perverted, just because, you know, Americans kind of saw that with their own eyes 3 years ago that Russia invaded Ukraine. So, you know, you've got to have a little bit of a backstory that explains how Ukraine could have avoided that war, but it's pretty clear that Russia started it.
Yeah, and I guess it's all about context and what's absolute truth and what's not. But to say that Ukraine invaded Russia or Ukraine started the war, that's completely inaccurate. Where do the talks stand now?
You know, I think that this meeting in Saudi Arabia in Riyadh was just a kind of get to know each other again kind of meeting. And so we tried to feel out what the Russians might be willing to do to stop the war. And they were trying to get a sense of what concessions we might be willing to make. But there hasn't been a lot of contact between us and the Russians over the last 3 years, almost none at all. And even with an incoming administration, there's just a lot of background work that's going to be needed before they can come to some kind of agreement. But I do think that the meeting, I'm not in the camp that thought that, you know, there's no way we should ever meet with the Russians. We do need to settle this conflict, and you're not going to settle it without a meeting with the Russians. And, you know, the Europeans and the Ukrainians don't necessarily need to be at the table for that.
That's interesting to hear you say that. So let's talk about the context of this, if we can, Professor, and go back to the origins of this, because sometimes things are around for a long time and we forget the context. We forget how they started. Take us back to when all of this started.
Well, you could say it started back in 2014 with, you know, there was the government in Kiev was overthrown and then Russia annexed Crimea. And so that was kind of the beginning of the conflict between Russia and Ukraine and also between Russia and the West. But it really accelerated in spring of 2022 when Ukraine restricted a whole bunch of Russian-oriented politicians in Ukrainian politics. The U.S. kind of supported that, but you know, Russia mobilized troops on the border, and then subsequently in February of 2022 invaded. So, you know, I do think that Ukraine probably couldn't have avoided this war. They absolutely didn't start it. But we probably could have dealt with Russian concerns a little bit differently over the last decade that might have prevented this war from coming about.
Let's go into that. Such as what, Professor?
Sure. Well, the Minsk Agreement, which was what came out of the short war between Russia and Ukraine in 2014 and 2015, stipulated that, you know, Ukraine would make changes to its constitution, would essentially give autonomy to the parts of Ukraine other than Crimea that were not under the control of the government, would hold local elections, and then they would regain their territorial integrity. In other words, Russia would support the reintegration of these territories in the Donbas back into Ukraine. And Ukraine never implemented that. And we, the U.S. And the Europeans, didn't really put any pressure on Ukraine to implement the Minsk Agreement. So in some ways, it's the failure to implement the settlement that came out of the war in 2014 and 2015 that created the conditions for the war in 2022 to start.
So although a mischaracterization by President Trump to say that Ukraine started it, it seems as though their hands are not exactly clean when it comes to this either, as it relates to the Minsk Agreement.
Yeah. I think Trump is on stronger ground when he says this could have been avoided. You know, it's absolutely false to say that Ukraine started it, but it's possible that we could have avoided it in 2021 and 2022.
All I'm trying to do is find the truth here, and I'm glad you're educating me about this stuff. So when it comes to the costs in terms of human lives and casualties on the Russian side, on the Ukraine side, and the treasure cost when it comes to the United States, what are we looking at since this started in spring of 22?
So on the U.S. side, this is called Operation Atlantic Resolve. And so that involves Defense Department money, so shipments of arms, as well as USAID and intelligence support. And the price tag on that for us is about $185 billion. So not the $350 billion of the president's tweet yesterday, but still a very substantial amount of money.
Well, soon you'll be talking about real money, right, Professor?
Yeah, yeah, that's right. A million here, a million here. Pretty soon we're talking about real money. We're talking billion.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Yeah. So that's, and what about lives on both sides and casualties, et cetera? Do you have numbers?
We don't have accurate numbers. The Ukrainians don't share their numbers with us, and we only have estimates of the Russian side. But the estimate for Russian casualties is upwards of 250,000, and most people in Washington think that the figure for the Ukrainians is just about the same, if not just slightly less.
That's a lot of dead
people.
Half a million dead people. And let me take a break, Professor. We come back, we'll open it up with this question, which is, somebody texted in, they're trying to keep track of all of this. What could Ukraine have done with this Minsk agreement? What could they have done to prevent U.S. spending $185 billion and half a million people dying? 621, we're talking to Keith Darden, professor in the Department of Policies, Governance, and Economics at the School of International Service at American University, trying to cut through all the politics and the chatter and get to what's going on with Ukraine and the United States and Russia, etc. Traffic now, WWL.
from the Acadian Windows and Hurricane Shutters WWL Traffic Center. I'm Joe Cardosi. Cold out there, but no ice affecting the roadways this morning. The Bonnie Carey Spillway is still moving well to and from LaPlace. I-10 is delay-free as you move from Kenner to Metairie. The causeway is looking good to and from the North Shore, and the twin spans are all clear as you head in from Slidell. You're moving well through the Morrison Curve and across the high-rise as you head in from the east. Moving toward downtown from the east, smooth sailing all the way through the Claiborne flyover. No delays across the Crescent City connection as you head to or from the West Bank. The Huey P is also free and clear. With your look at traffic, I'm Joe Cardosi.
Hi, Mardi Gras is here. First big weekend coming up at Every Day is a parade at Maurice French Pastries, 3501 Hesmer in Metairie with the crew of King Cakes. A little something for everybody, just like parades and floats. Chef Jean-Luc Alban, a classically trained French chef, he knows his way around the kitchen. At Maurice French Pastries, you'll find traditional king cakes, what's become traditional king cakes with a whole lot of icing and sugar and cinnamon and fillings. But at Maurice's, they run the gamut. Of course, they got apple and cream cheese, but things like guava and more exotic flavors. And there's also something for the discerning, discriminating, more delicate palate. You got to try that French king cake.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Flaky, buttery puff pastry filled with rum-flavored cream of almond. How about the panciatella filled with chantilly cream, toasted almonds, and fresh strawberries? A nice change from the traditional cinnamon, heavy icing, and all that stuff. There's a Bourbon Street that's flavored with Kentucky bourbon creamy chocolate custard and toasted pecans, and the General Foster sautéed bananas flamed with Caribbean rum folded in light vanilla cream, and they're all wrapped in a delicate pastry that only a classically trained French chef like Jean-Luc could produce. King cakes are great, but they're even better at Maurice French Pastries. Try something different. 3501 Hesmer in Metairie. And yes, they do ship. Call 504-885-1526 or go to mauricefrenchpastries.com. 626, Tommy Tucker, WWL, trying to cut through the politics and messaging with Keith Darden, a professor in the Department of Politics, Governance, and Economics at the School of International Service at American University. People are texting in, Trump this, Biden that, Trump bashing this. If anything, we're taking up for President Trump, saying that while Ukraine didn't start this, they certainly might have been able to prevent it. And we talked about the losses in terms of lives and $185 billion, not $300 billion. So if you say we're Trump bashing, go off in your own world, enjoy yourself. We're going to keep moving here with the professor. And to go back, professor, this all could have been avoided if Ukraine had what?
Well, I should start by saying if Russia was bent on taking Ukraine from the beginning, let's say from, you know, after the end of the Soviet Union, mm-hmm. Then there's nothing Ukraine could have done differently. I don't believe that that's the case. I think Russia kind of worked its way towards this position. And so, you know, you got to understand what I'm saying in light of the fact that I'm not just assuming that Russia was going to invade Ukraine from the beginning, that they're sort of genetically oriented on that.
Gotcha.
So what Ukraine could have done is implement the Minsk Accords in a way that would have been amenable to Russia. So that would have been changing their constitution to turn Ukraine into kind of a confederation. In other words, give a lot of regional autonomy to different parts of Ukraine. So Ukraine's a very diverse country. Some areas are Russian speaking and very oriented towards Russia. Others are Ukrainian speaking and very oriented towards the West. And so Minsk would have created a constitution that sort of, like Switzerland, kind of let different regions kind of govern themselves. And Ukraine would have been neutral internationally so that they wouldn't have been in an alliance with the West. They wouldn't have been in an alliance with Russia. They just would have been kind of a loosely held together confederation of regions. So now, if you think Russia was setting up for an invasion, a loose confederation of regions makes a much easier target than a coherent nation state. And so if you think that Russia was going to invade anyway, Minsk would have just been a stepping stone on their way to a more successful invasion. I think actually Minsk would have solved the Russians' problem for them, which was the perception of a threat on their border coming from the West, and also concern about Russian-speaking and Russian-oriented populations in the territory of Ukraine, which had been part of Russia for about 350 years before 1991. So they had a real interest there. They had a concern for the populations there, particularly populations that were oriented towards Russia and Russian culture. And I think Minsk probably would have settled that.
We only have 30 seconds left. The common sense part of me would say, well, okay, well, let's just right now shut it down, go back and do what Ukraine could have done with the Minsk Accords. Is that possible or not?
The Russians say it's not possible, and the Ukrainians say it's not possible. But we're probably going to end up getting something which is the partition of Ukraine. So the areas that Russia controls are going to become part of Russia. De facto, if not by law, and that, Ukraine's going to make some changes to its constitution. The question is, are they going to be forced to be neutral? NATO, the U.S. has already said NATO's not on the table for them. So alliances with the West, already not there. A declaration of neutrality might not be the worst thing for that country.
Thank you, Professor. Appreciate your insight. Keith Darden, Professor, Department of Politics, Governance and Economics at the School of International Service at American University. Mike Strain, we come back. Right now, time for WWL First News. They're good, some of them not so good. You see trucks all over. Nash, I can tell you from firsthand experience, does great work, and you will be satisfied. 504-835-4440, 504-835-4440. Nash Heating and Air. To find out everything you need to know, go to NashAC.com. 644, 16 till 7, Tommy Tucker, WWL. It is hot. Not hot, what I'm talking about, cold. They said it was going to be cold, and it continues to be cold this morning and today and tomorrow. Mike Strain joins us now, Commissioner of Louisiana Department of Agriculture and Forestry. Mike, I think I lost my mind there for a second. I don't know what's going on.
I think the cold got to you.
It might have.
You know, we used to talk about frost on a pumpkin, the blizzard on the bayou. Now we got ice again. It's cold, but we're lucky it's not raining, so that is good. But it's down here on the North Shore, North Louisiana. It's down where, you know, people, pets, plants, and pipes is where we're at. It's 27 degrees here on the North Shore.
So does this spite of cold weather, is this another round of cold weather, does that affect anything crop-wise, Mike?
Well, it does. You know, last week we had a number of flowers that were blooming. You know, ornamentals were blooming. You know, we had, of course, strawberries trying to come back from the first freeze. And so what it does, this little cold snap will knock those blossoms off, and we'll lose a couple of weeks on a number of different flowering plants, you know, mainly fruits and vegetables. Because, look, we had pollen on the windshield last week, so some of the plants are confused. Our larger crops are not in the ground yet. We normally, you know, start towards the end of this month, but actually by the 1st of March, we got to be in the ground. We got to have consistent soil temperatures over 45 degrees and have it dry enough to get in. So once the conditions are right, it's going to be a race to get, you know, the corn and the cotton in the ground and later the beans in the ground. And so we're going to be very, very, very busy. Crawfish, they're taking a little siesta. They're down in their burrows. They'll not be catching many this week. But next week, they'll be back. We've already seen, you know, crawfish at, you know, around $4 a pound. Really nice crawfish, too. And so we do expect that once this cold snap's over, and I listened to what you said this morning, this is going to be the last one, right?
I hope.
Yeah. I hope so. We don't need a Mardi Gras cold snap. And I visited with Jay Grimes, the state climatologist, earlier this week. You know, and he's very hopeful, too.
Well, he controls the weather. Tell him.
Great job. Yeah, that's what I did. I told him, it's all on you. Yeah. He said, no. I just reported. He said, I don't think so. I think back in your office, you got the computer and you make all this work. But we're going to get through this. We're very lucky. We don't have heavy precipitation. It's cold weather. It's just a cold snap. So, but again, everybody needs to be careful. Be careful with their space heaters, you know, and then once it thaws out, you know, check everything in case you have, you know, any leaks. If you like me, I always forget to drip one pipe somewhere, you know, so that's what we'll be dealing with.
Mike, I wanted to talk to you about the layoffs that happened at the U.S. Department of Agriculture Research Center, New Orleans. I don't want to talk about the politics of this. All I want to know is about the USDA's Southern Regional Research Center. Edge of City Park, I know somebody whose mom worked there for years and years and years and years and years, and I still don't know what they do. Tell me about that USDA Southern Regional Research Center. What do they do there? And go ahead.
That is a very, very highly classified facility. I know it takes a lot of security to get in the building.
So that's why I didn't know after all those years what you did.
That's exactly right.
Okay.
They do a lot of work there. They do a lot of development of different materials. You know, that's where they've worked with cotton to create a lot of different products. And it is a lot of very high-level research. And it's really nobody talks about it. And it's a pretty good-sized facility. It's been there for a long time. Mm-hmm. We have maintained it. We have some offices in there, but it's a high security level. And it's not only the layoffs there. There were layoffs across the board. A number of researchers, most of those that had not become tenured, in other words, they had still not gotten that probationary period. It happened also with some of our sugarcane researchers. We lost a lot of our feral swine trappers because they're on 13-month contracts, and a number of other individuals. And it was blanket across the board. It wasn't aimed at any group in particular, but to cut back $300+ billion dollars. And if you're looking at there in the Department of Agriculture, I will be meeting with Secretary Rollins next week, mm-hmm. probably Monday or Tuesday. We're all headed to Washington. All of the ag commissioners will be meeting with her, as well as the new head of the Zeldin, head of the EPA, and then maybe Kennedy, with the FDA. We will see whether that we'll meet with him. We'll be meeting with our congressional delegation, and then I'll also be meeting with members of the State Department. So we're headed to Washington on Monday, and try to drill down and get some better answers.
I'm all for eliminating government waste, but I don't think you can take what's the old 101st Airborne approach, kill them all and let God sort them. I don't know that you want to go at it with a flamethrower, do you?
Well, that's what they're doing. If you look at the federal rules, federal, quote, civil service type rules, trying to immediately cut budgets, and I think that is the approach, and doing it very, very quickly rather than selectively over time. What thing happens, say, if you go into a state agency with civil service, you can't just lay certain individuals off. You have to either eliminate all the job positions all at once, and you have to do it by tiers. It's very hard to reduce the size of government. It sounds like it's easy, mm-hmm. but it's not when you don't have the ability to eliminate positions. And so it's going to be a challenge, and they're going to have to reprioritize everything that's being done, look at everything, say, all right, this is necessary, this is not. I know a number of people have been rehired. The USDA personnel that were laid off, that were involved in dealing with high path avian influenza, they've been hired back, and we will see. So I think we're going to see some selective rehiring. But right now, there's some controversy, some issues, and a certain degree of uncertainty.
Yeah, I always tell people when they're looking for a career, and they're asking, what should I do? How do I do it? I say it's hard enough to hit a target when you're aiming at it. If you're just scatter shooting, Lord only knows what's going to happen, and I'm afraid that might be what's going on here. But we'll talk more when we come back. Mike Strain, Commissioner of Louisiana Department of Agriculture and Forestry. Mike, the good news, you're talking about crawfish at this point in the season, $4 a pound. That's a heck of a lot better than last year, isn't it?
Oh, my gosh, and they're nice, too.
Yeah.
They're really nice, and we had some crabs. From the White Shrimp Boot Warriors down there in Chalmette. I've never seen crabs that fat.
Well, let's
I've
talk
never
about,
seen them.
Let's talk about that when we come back, because, man, I always look for those. I don't really call them the number ones or not, and they're hard to find. 652.
Oh, they're number ones.
Are they?
These
okay.
Are extra fat number ones.
All right, 8 till 8, 8 till 7 now, traffic WWL. 6:57 and a half, Tommy Tucker, WWO. Quickly back to Mike Strain, Commissioner, Louisiana Department of Agriculture and Forestry. Mike, tell me about these crabs. What about these number ones, big crabs?
Oh, they were really nice. And, you know, they're catching some really nice crabs right now, and they are nicer and fatter than I've ever seen. So we went down to a company, White Boot Warriors, there in St. Bernard, you know, down in Chalmette, right down from the refineries on St. Bernard Highway. And they're really fishing everywhere. So right now they're coming from a lot of different areas, but they're really nice. And, you know, we need to get back to eating those Louisiana crabs when we make our gumbo. This is gumbo weather. And when my grandmother made gumbo, there was always crabs in it. We had shrimp in it. You know, but so however you make your gumbo, put a few oysters in there. But they're really, really, really nice. And now it's time to get in. I saw some beautiful number ones and number twos, but they were fat and how you say fat and sassy and mm-hmm. looking for a pot.
So did these number ones, are most of those sent to Baltimore? Do I remember reading that somewhere or not? Or am I making that up?
So no. So what they do, we have the fresh market here over the weekend, and by Monday or Tuesday, they're sent up the East Coast. So they go to Maryland and Baltimore, mm-hmm. and then, you know, and that's what they're consumed there. You know, just about anywhere you go on the East Coast and you eat crabs, guess what? They are our crabs from Lake Pontchartrain,
right.
from our bayous and bays. And, yes, and we have the best-tasting crabs in the whole wide world. And so when you eat them on the East Coast, guess what? They are Lake Pontchartrain crabs.
Can you get the number ones here?
Oh, yes, you can. Yes, you can. You can shop at one of your markets or just, you know, check out. And, again, it's White Boot Warriors. Go on Facebook. You could buy them there, you know, at their dock. You can buy them there, and they'll sell them to you and bring them home and cook them. A lot of people are doing that now. Go on the Internet. Go on Facebook and check them out, White Boot Warriors, and get you, you know, a hamper.
Thank you, Mike.